Rhode Island House Republican leader Blake Filippi, welcome back to the Publix Radio.
I'm thrilled to be here, Ian. Thank you.
The big story in Rhode Island this week has been the emerging race in the 2nd Congressional District, where Congressman Jim Langevin has announced he will not seek a 12th term. Former gubernatorial candidate Seth Magaziner, Rhode Island's general treasurer, this week announced that he is running for as a Democrat for the congressional seat. He used a lot of messaging saying that democracy is at stake in this election, and he invoked the name of Kevin McCarthy, likely to be the next U.S. Speaker of the House if Republicans make big gains in midterm elections this year. Do you agree with Seth Magaziner that this is a race about Republican control of Congress and the need to take a stand against that?
No, I think it's pretty clear Republicans are going to take control of Congress, whether the 2nd District goes Republican or not. And it's in Rhode Island's interest to have a representative in the governing majority. It just is.
How come?
Because we unfortunately live in a state, not a state, but the state of this nation is of federal largesse. And the federal money government just blows money all over to the states. And if you don't have anyone in the governing majority where the budget is written, i.e. the House, Rhode Island might suffer. So what I heard from Seth Magaziner, a man who I respect, was all about party politics rather than what's best for the state of Rhode Island. It seems like he wants to go down there for the Democratic Party rather than the people of Rhode Island.
So far, two Republicans are running for the 2nd Congressional District, State Senator Jessica De La Cruz from North Smithfield and former State Representative Bob Lancia from Cranston. Former Cranston Mayor Alan Fung has not made any announcement about his intentions. Do you expect him to run in the congressional race?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it makes sense. You know, when you have 90,000 people in Providence, 87,000 in Warwick, 80,000 in Cranston, making up, I don't know, approximately half the district, it would make sense for someone who has popularity in that Cranston-Warwick corridor to run. He's shown himself to be an effective fundraiser and campaigner. So I would expect him to get in. But also Jessica De La Cruz is a great candidate, too. I mean, she's shown her mettle up here. And I think they'd both be formidable candidates.
Mayor Fung, previously before this opening in Congress came up, was considering a run for state general treasurer. From the strategic viewpoint of Republicans in Rhode Island, do you think it makes more sense for Fung to run for state general treasurer or for Congress?
I would say Congress. I think if, you know, our goal is to reinvigorate the state Republican Party, having someone in our congressional delegation, I think would go a long way towards that. Than the state treasurer. So I think it makes sense, not just for, you know, Mayor Fung's career, but I think it makes sense for our party more than having someone in the treasurer office.
Speaking of political races, we're here in almost the second month of 2022, and the Republican Party still does not have a gubernatorial candidate this year. You ruled out running for governor. How come?
Ian, it's a personal decision. I didn't feel it was right in my life at this time. I think there is a path to victory for a moderate Republican, and you know I anticipate one stepping up soon. But for me, it was just something that, you know, my heart wasn't into at the time. And you have to follow your heart in life. And when you don't follow your heart is when you make mistakes.
Are you open to running for any other office than the one you now hold as a state representative, or are you committed to seeking re-election for your state representative seat?
Yeah, at this point, I mean, crazier things have happened in the world, but at this point, I anticipate running for re-election for my state rep seat.
As we head deeper into the election year, I know Charles Kalenda is running as a Republican for Attorney General. It seems like there's a paucity of Republicans for the other state general offices, governor, treasurer, secretary of state. Why is it so difficult to get Republicans to run for these offices when they come up?
Well, I mean, running for office is a difficult proposition. And, you know, we are definitely a bluish, very light purple state. And, you know, our focus really is on recruiting General Assembly candidates because that's where all the power lies in this state. It's great to have someone in general office, but when the General Assembly runs the show, I think you realize that it's more important to focus your efforts here in the House and Senate.
Speaking of the General Assembly, what would you say the message is for Republicans running for the legislature this year? What is the message that would excite voters to support Republican candidates for the General Assembly?
Well, I would ask you and your listeners to take 10 minutes and go listen to my State of the State response from last Tuesday. I mean, that sums it up pretty good. We're the party of good government. We're the party of the working man and woman. We're the party of small business. We're the party of transparency and standing up for the rule of law. And when you have all those things, it makes for a strong society. We're the party of education reform. We're the party who's standing against this absolute atrocity of a monopoly in our healthcare system that Lifespan and Care New England are trying to put together, which is going to destroy healthcare in this state. And all the insiders seem to support because their buddies are going to benefit from it. We stand against the special interest and for the people of the state of Rhode Island. And that's why we need to be supported, and that's why we need to grow.
Let's talk a little bit more about that proposed healthcare merger between Rhode Island's two largest hospital systems, Lifespan and Care New England. You've made it very clear, and you said this during a panel discussion that the Publix Radio staged last year, that you think this is really bad. You thought it was a mistake, in your words, for the state to chase away Partners Healthcare out of Boston, I think now known as Brigham Mass General. You make the point that that is an elite level of healthcare, where people come from other countries if they have the means to get their health care, and it was negligent or not a good idea for Rhode Island to exclude that entity. Be that as it may, the proposition on the table now, which is being vetted by state and federal regulators, is for Care New England and Lifespan to merge, and the aspiration on part of the organizers is for them to form an academic health system with Brown University. Do you believe that state and or federal regulators could put sufficient safeguards on approving the merger that would address some of the concerns that you have about monopoly power, and ensure that this merger, that if it were to move forward, would work in favor of the public interest here in Rhode Island?
The short answer is no. And the longer answer is because by creating this monopoly, and whatever type of state regulatory agency is going to oversee this monopoly, essentially what you've done is removed power from the healthcare consumer and transferred it to the monopoly and government. That's just a recipe for disaster, as I have said. We have to remember how we got here. We got here because of the anti-competitive practices of Lifespan and Brown using, you know, their outsized influence in this state to kill that partner's acquisition. You got to remember, they had a signed deal on the table and they went to get approval. And Raimondo, after being lobbied heavily by Lifespan and Brown, killed that deal. And then what happened? You know, Brown University and Lifespan come in and scoop up Care New England. I don't think the government's going to be able to control this monopoly. I don't have any faith in a regulatory agency being able to provide better services than two world-class hospital groups, Lifespan and Partners, competing for patients, driving up quality and driving down costs and giving customers choice.
Do you have any expectation that Partners would re-enter into considering Rhode Island if regulators reject the proposed Lifespan-Care New England merger?
I mean, we'd have to have leadership in the state that goes up to them and said, we are sorry for the way you were treated. Come back to Rhode Island and you will be treated fairly. You'll get a fair deal here. Because frankly, they were burnt. And I have business contacts throughout the Northeast, and you should hear the things they're saying about our state. How it's a total backwater, ridiculous place. Don't even think about doing business here. Look what they did to Partners Healthcare, who wanted to go in and improve medical quality and delivery in this state.
Let's talk about another one of the issues you mentioned during your rebuttal to Governor McKee's State of the State address. You talked about school choice. You say parents should have more flexibility in where their kids go to school. How would this work under the Republican proposal? And does it have any realistic chance of moving forward?
I mean, we'll see. To answer your second part, I mean, more people need to get involved and pressure their representatives and senators to have some type of plan like this, because the special interests that don't want anything to change are up here every day lobbying and spending money on elections. Our plan isn't, you know, a pure school choice plan. Our plan is essentially that if you have a child in a failing school district, at that point you have a type of open enrollment where you can get your child out of that school and into another school inside that district or in another district that has availability to get them a decent education. A lot of our general officers send their kids to private school. They exercise choice every single day. Struggling families in our predominantly minority communities should have somewhat of the same option, and that's to get their child out of a failing school. because we're leaving generations behind. We've known about it for 30 years. We haven't had the political will to do anything about it. We just throw our hands up.
You filed a lawsuit a while ago about the Joint Committee on Legislative Services, that is the hiring and spending arm of the legislature, controlled mostly by the House Speaker. What is the status of that litigation?
There's currently a decision we're waiting on from Judge Silverstein saying whether he has jurisdiction or not to hear the case. This has been going on for over 2 years now. We need a decision. We need to know whether we can seek relief in Rhode Island courts or we have to go to federal court. It's one or the other. We shouldn't have to wait 2 years. Judge Silverstein is a highly respected judge. We feel he's going to make the right decision, but it's gone on for too long. It's gone on for 2 years.
Is this lawsuit getting in the way of the public interest? Because Speaker Shikarchi says he would hold public meetings of the Joint Committee on Legislative Services if this litigation was resolved.
How do we drop our lawsuit and then foreclose our claims? You know, Speaker Shikarchi said when he was running for speaker that he would have meetings of the JCLS irrespective of the lawsuit. And then when he became speaker, he said, I can't because of the lawsuit. So, I mean, with all due respect to the speaker, he changed his tune. We have a fundamental disagreement on what the law is. Until we clarify what the law is, this dispute's just going to rear its ugly head again in 6 months when they start spending $46 million without calling meetings again. I just believe the existence of this lawsuit is a red herring. Nick Mattiello said the same thing. JCLS is where an immense amount of power is, and people in this building and in the state don't like to give up power. They could resolve this lawsuit, Ian, if we had a public meeting and we adopted rules about how money is spent. My lawsuit would become moot at that point.
People who study the issue say there are 20 million people in the United States who buy into the big lie, the mistaken belief that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from Donald Trump. And not just that, but who are willing to use violence to change the situation. 20 million people. Are you concerned about that?
I don't believe it.
Polling by a number of organizations shows that there's a significant percentage of Republicans who don't believe that Joe Biden fairly won the 2020 election. Is that a concern for you?
I don't believe the polls at all. I honestly don't. I know tons of Republicans. We don't run around, start and scream about the election being stolen. I mean, I don't believe it. I think there's plenty of people out there who want to perpetuate divisive cultural issues so we don't talk about the real issues this country faces. And Donald Trump has become a divisive cultural issue. You know, if you want to talk about federal issues, we should talk about how trillions of dollars are being stolen from the American people right now by the Federal Reserve System. But both parties don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about stupid things that don't matter to anybody to distract us from the real issues that affect our pocketbook, affect war and peace, and affect our lives. And Donald Trump, unfortunately, has become a divisive cultural issue that, frankly, I don't think many people care about.
As far as the assault on the Capitol on January 6th last year, you don't think that is an indicator of a far larger number of people who were sympathetic to that movement and the use of violence to try to change the outcome of an election?
I think they were a bunch of criminals and thugs and rioters, and they should be treated like criminal thugs and rioters and put in jail. Don't forget that after that riot happened, the vast majority of Republicans came in to certify the election. I don't think it's reflective of the Republican Party, but the problem with the Capitol riots is that they were universally condemned by everybody across the political spectrum. But within 1 week, the Democrats decided to turn it and use it as a political cudgel to attack 50% of people in this country as being unpatriotic and people that want to overthrow the government.
That's all the time we have, so we'll leave it there. Thank you for joining us, Rhode Island House Republican Leader Blake Phillippe.
Thanks, Ian.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.